When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everyone I've talked to disagrees with me on this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I
completely.
Disagree. Yeah.
I understand. I think even Joe Abercrombie disagrees with me.
Say one thing about Richard. Say one thing about Richard. Say he rambles, okay?
You're right. I can be pretentious and correct. Welcome everyone to the Toot Around Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Bloody Austin.
Today has been a day, over a year? Close to 2 years in the waiting before our last video where we did a spoiler-free pitch of the Blade itself and First Law in general. Mm-hmm. Today we actually get to do the full review because Austin has now read this book.
Yes.
I am so excited. I also did my refresher. I did a like chapter by chapter summary read, refreshed myself on the names. I'm as prepped as ready as I can be without just completely rereading it.
Hell yeah.
So, overall, I've been begging for you to read this book for close to 2 years now.
To be exact, December of 2022 is when you reviewed this book with me there.
Oh.
Yes.
Than just shy of 2 years.
Yep.
I've been begging you since then to read this book. Now that you have, what are your thoughts?
My spoiler-free thoughts, of course.
Spoiler-free thoughts.
These first 10, 15 minutes, as always, spoiler-free. Then we will spoil all of the Blade itself. But first, yes. you're safe for now. What a bloody good book. What a bloody great book. This is so to give some information on this, I was looking back on our spoiler-free review that we gave. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you pitched the book to me, what you said back then?
No.
Me either. So that's why I went back and looked. And you're talking about how Joe Abercrombie had he studied psychology in college. And I forget which college, but he studied psychology. And you attributed that to how he has such fantastic character work in this book. Because this came out in 2006, but written in 2004. And this is his debut book, Joe Abercrombie's first. And for those who don't know, this is the First Law. A lot of you watching may have read the book and you're just seeing what our thoughts on. But those who haven't, it's the First Law series. It's a trilogy. But then after that trilogy, there are then three standalone books. After the three standalone books, there's another trilogy in the First Law universe. So there's 9 total books, my knowledge here. And this is the first one. We're going to be reading them. I'm enjoying my time. So to answer your question, Rich, it's amazing. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm a character first person. And for people out there, who else, because you like it.
I love it. I'm going to actually have a big hot take in this video.
Yeah.
I stand against the grain in one particular category. I have been lambasted. And I'm curious to see if you will stand against me or with me in it.
Anakin
we'll
and
see.
Kenobi. Well, I don't know.
I don't know what side you're going to take. I hope you take
I can
mine.
Tell you.
The correct side.
Oh, okay. Okay. your controversial takes on the plot.
Yes.
This is known for not for having a meandering plot or not having a plot. People will joke it has no plot. You love the plot.
I love the plot. I think the plot. The plot. Floored me.
Ooh.
Floored me. I love it. I will stand by it.
You know what?
Joe Abercrombie may actually disagree with me, but he's wrong. It's great.
You sound like me in Red Rising, my defense of Red Rising right now. This is great because now I can play the villain. I love this book, but I'm going to disagree with you on the plot section. So tune in for that fight. That'll be fun. But this book, who would you say would like this to pick up the Blade itself? Well, who would you pitch this to?
Big thing is this is a great book that is subverting the genre, subverting expectations. It basically takes the idea of the Lord of the Rings, really, and says, what if the opposite was true about everything? There we go. That's what we get. We get almost every character is in some way a twist on a classic trope. It is an incredibly dark book, but also really funny. I think there are darker books than this.
It's known as Grimdark.
It's known as Grimdark.
Joe Abercrombie's called Daddy Grimdark by us and others, but mainly us.
There are technically grimmer books, darker books. Totally get it. This one has a lot of dark issues, dark characters, morally gray, all that stuff, but is done in such a playful way with tons of humor that it's an incredibly funny book. So it doesn't read depressing.
Would it be fair to say someone who has read or likes Song of Ice and Fire might like this book?
Probably.
So if you're finding that category of person.
Yeah, that's a strong likelihood.
Strong likelihood, and you have to be, I think it's essential. You might say otherwise when we get later, but you have to be a character-first reader. If you are a character-first reader, you will not just character-first, because it's not like everybody's a hero in this story. Character-first and morally gray.
To give even further spoiler-free notes about the book,
yeah,
I would say the plot is hidden. For most of this book in the series, it's a lot of setup. There's a lot of little nuggets dropped that if you're paying attention, basically the main plot of this book is in the B-line story. The A-line plot feels like there's no plot. It feels like there's no connection. But all the hints, references, and little things that are dropped in the background of each POV is an overarching story. That is why I love it so much, and why I love the plot is it feels like on surface level, there is no plot. It's just kind of meandering. But on the underneath, there is a really great plot that is put together by the end. So we'll get there when we get there.
I don't want to false advertise, though. Character first. If you're going to this book, expect True. You're going to fall into some characters, and you have to love the complexity of them, or just love the push and pull of you somehow love viewing this character and their point of view, but they're not a good person.
If you need to have a character that is morally good, like ultimately, like
hero,
if you need to have a hero in your story, this book ain't for you.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Exactly.
There are no heroes here.
Just to give premise, there's six point of views in this book, but there's really three main characters, and that is Glockta, Logan Nine Fingers, because he's missing a finger, and Jizal. Jizal Dine Luthar.
Yes.
And so those three characters, just to give a premise of where do they all start, Glockta is a torture victim who now tortures, and he doesn't know why. And you have Logan Nine Fingers is this retired badass who has a bad past, did bad things. We don't know. It's mysterious, and he's trying to leave that behind. And then Jizal is more into himself than he is to others, but then there's this forbidden love that happens where he's like, wait, do I like somebody else other than myself? So it's these three characters with morally corrupt background history. It's
not even gray. They're not good people.
Right.
None of them are good. But they're just so fun to follow.
Baez is fun. he doesn't do good things also, but you know. but that's to give the premise. Song of Ice and Fire readers will probably like this. I also, would you go as far to say there's any overlap for other books that aren't Grimdark? Would you say, is there another book, if somebody like that, they would read The Blade itself? Because that's really the only one I could think of.
Sure.
That would be a good match.
I mean, this is your classic setup to a multi-POV epic fantasy. So if you're in that vein, I'm imagining you've read something like Stormlight. You've read something like, again, we said The Song of Ice and Fire, but I've been technically looking at my books.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Lacanus Trilogy, you're a fan of the Black Prism, the Lightbringer series, fan of all of Anthony Ryan's stuff. I'm imagining you've read a bunch of this fantasy stuff and you want a little something different. You want your expectations to be subverted. That's what Joe Abercrombie does best.
Great way to put it. And to give some other people's thoughts, this wasn't our book club of the month for our Patreon, but kind of just did a spontaneous book club. I I led one just last night, actually, talking with the patrons about the play itself. By the way, if you want to join our Patreon, we do read a book every single month, and we do more than just one book a month. Sometimes we'll do things like this when we just want to read a book. We'll have a community book club about it. So join us in the description below. Check that out. Also, check out affiliate link for the Blade itself if you're convinced to read it. That also helps support us. But I was talking with the patrons about this book, and the general synopsis for their feeling on this was somewhere between good and great. I think we're even higher than our patrons on this.
Good.
Just a bit. We're a bit on the top end of that spectrum because Cuban specifically, he seemed to be the one that liked it the most. We had Kendall and others also really appreciated the book, thought it was great. They liked the latter books even more. So don't spoil anything beyond that. We're only talking Blade itself. However, Lucas, one of our patrons, Lucas, he had some complaints about the characters. So I'll explain his point of view when it gets to the character section. Though we have some other booktubers such as Patrick, Matt's Fantasy Book Reviews, Bookborn. Basically, everybody on BookTube really enjoys this. Other authors really enjoy this. There's a quote by George R. R. Martin on the book cover. It says, "Joe Abercrombie is terrific." Wow.
Wonderfully, succinct.
Very succinct. It may have been longer, but who wants to put a long quote on the book?
I guess. Something like that.
So that's what others think. Check out the affiliate link. Check out the Patreon book club. Beyond that, it's time to give our rating for the Blade itself. The Rambler rating.
The Rambler rating.
The Rambler rating.
Let's have you go first.
I gave the Blade itself a bloody 4.25 out of 5 stars. A really great book.
I gave it a 5. It floored me. Oh. I love this book.
Oh my God.
5 out of 5.
This is your Red Rising. This is your Red Rising.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. The joy I see. I felt like this once.
Yeah.
That's so good.
It floored me. And I want to give context of originally back on our first video, I have my own original rating. Yeah. I gave the original an 8.8 out of 10. Out of 10. And I had a bunch of different scores here. That was a general average. I have generally upped my score on most of these after going back through this book.
Also, our old rating system averaged the category, so it made things... So
but
our,
even every category, I kind of upped.
Wow.
It was pretty high.
Why have you not made me read this book earlier, if that's how much you love it?
I've been trying! I've been trying to go to
other books. You distract me. You go, okay, Wheel of Time. Then you go over here, like, Howling Dark. And now you're having me read, okay, what is your favorite book? Lonesome Dove. You want me to read that?
Yes.
So you've been having me put this off that long.
No! I tried to get you to read it close to 2 years ago.
You know who didn't put this off? For those who don't know, Majd, M-A-J-D is his name, has sent me emails titling them First Law Bullying Email Number 1, Number 2, Number 3. He has sent dozen or so emails throughout the months saying, hey, he got to the point a month or so ago saying, if you do not start reading the First Law, I will start spoiling it in these emails. He threatened me with the one thing I hate the most, spoilers, and it worked. So shout out to you for getting me, pushing me even more to read the First Law in this series. So So you gave it a 5. I get a 4.25. Before we go to spoilers, I will say I think the best categories for our rating system are characters, top tier. So that I think if you're going to this book, the best categories are characters. And honestly, close behind it, prose is fantastic. And I would say on the negative end, the worst aspect is the plot. And you disagree, but I would say the plot is definitely the worst aspect of the Blade itself. Really great book. Love the characters. And so curious to see where book 2 goes. So what do you think?
Fantastic. I have similar feelings of emotional impact for me is one of the highest. I would say plot is up there as some of the highest. And the prose as well. So, okay. and of course, characters, I think, probably objectively some of the best, but we'll get there.
It's time then. Spoiler warning. We did that good. Only like 13 something minutes. That's not bad for us.
Not terrible.
On track. Okay. Spoiler warning for the Blade itself. If you have not read the book or if you just don't care about spoilers, we're going to be spoiling it now.
Yep.
Okay. Here we go. You've been warmed. Rich, the first category.
You've been warmed.
Did I say warmed?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting that lisp like clacked up. So emotional impact. What did you give that out of 5 stars?
It's a 5.
I'm expecting a lot of 5s. Floored you.
And I will give a specific moment.
I gave 4.25 just to put my score out there. Yes. Your specific
definition
moment.
Of floored is an outward reaction. So that you had an out-of-body kind of experience when reading the book. Yeah. And there were specifically two big ones where I was absolutely forward. The second one being I literally ran up the stairs of our house.
Down, but yes.
I ran up the stairs.
I thought I was downstairs in the studio. Was it up?
Nope. I ran into your room.
Oh, was it
I
up?
I threw this book on the ground saying, that's how you end a damn book.
You know what it was? You were in the basement. I was at the kitchen in the main floor.
Nope, I remember. Oh, I ran into your room and
you know
I threw the book.
I'll trust you. I'll trust you.
I was so impressed by this book. I just, that's as close to an out-of-body reaction. Like, I was so hyped by the end of it.
I remember that. I don't remember where I was, but I remember you being so excited.
And then there's also the duel scene for me. That there was a constant tension of I was constantly on edge waiting for this duel between Giselle and
Grost.
And then the payoff was so good. It blew my mind, mainly with plot, of how much was put together in them at that moment. That's what I loved. So those are the two biggest moments for me that had emotional outbursts that it's hard for me not to say floored. You know what I mean? Like
if you outburst several times, sounds like a 5 to you.
Yeah. So that's my score. I'm sorry. What did you give it again?
Don't I've be just sorry. Been... Listen, you're having this experience. It's called love and joy for the first time.
I know.
Take
I'm
it
animated.
In. Allow it. Allow it to consume you. Now, I love how your 5 energy is my 3.5 energy. Like, hey, guys, this book was cool. I think this book is going for action and to keep this away from characters and how awesome they are. Action. Is one of the main features of this, and both the scenes you're talking about are that build up to the action, build up, and then the action and that payoff. That's why I thought had a really great time with this. Is both Joe Abercrombie's action scenes are thrilling, and even when there's no action, so chapter one with Glockta going up those steps is not an quote unquote action scene, yet is just as thrilling as an action scene in a way where the challenge is the steps. It might not be a duel partner, but the steps are just as quality of a foe as a fighter themselves, like Grost, which is a great way of telling the story because I am a character first reader. I was going through this book just having a great time, and my best scenes as well, I would say some of them, a lot of my favorite scenes were the simpler moments, the moments where Giselle was having, Giselle's the correct Giselle, Dan Luthar. I'll call him Luthar, I guess.
Giselle,
yes. So a lot of my favorite scenes were just this inner monologue about thinking about Audie and having this. A lot of the lull moments I appreciated. I would say that the biggest cons for me, so the why I didn't give it the 5 floored, is I didn't have the out-of-body experience you did. So I wasn't like, bang, throwing the book down because of that. Also, I think some of it would... I'm attributing to some of the plot stuff, which we'll get to in plot section, but I had a really great time. I really enjoyed it. Was for you too, those two scenes were the pinnacle, but was there something else? Did you agree with me? Like the low scenes were also really
plenty.
Fun
and, some of my favorite scenes, of course, being the stairs, the introduction to Glockta, the ending fight with, we can talk about that one later, but I loved to hate Giselle. It was one of the most fun things is emotionally, I just hated him. And I love that Joe is allowing me to hate him. Just, he's our main character and I despise him. And for some reason, like on a purely the balance of scales, all the other main characters have done way worse things than Giselle. Way worse. Like he's never killed anybody. He's just conceited. He's a noble. That's basically it.
Likes looking in his reflection.
He likes looking in the mirror. That's it. I hated him. I hate him the most. But I loved reading his chapters. I loved hating him. It was wonderful.
Isn't it great? That very much matches your personality. This is not surprising to anybody listening. Everyone's like, oh, Rich. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, everything with Glockta, this we'll get into prose, but his internal monologue is just so funny and so just this dark, twisted humor, self-deprecating. Wonderful to experience. All those little moments are great. Everything with Logan and his internal monologues, just the small details of him being like recovering from a small scrap and going, I'm still alive, and realizing that a small mistake can even happen to him. that he's faced stronger opponents, that they tripped on a rock and now they're dead. That's all it takes. That the arrogance to think that you're such a good fighter that you'll always win. He knows that luck is such an important part. Love those little things about him. So floored me.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that our more back and forth conversation will be the reason this isn't five for me again. Plot stuff. However, for emotion and pulling me, great time. It ended at a point too where I am going into book two. Mm-hmm. Very excited.
I'm thrilled to go on. I do want to give one last point for the emotional sensation.
Yeah.
The biggest emotional feeling I had through this whole book was tension.
Yep.
And what I loved most, and this is ties directly into the plot, why the plot itself floored me emotionally, especially, is that every chapter I'm picking up on little details and it is useful in the next POV. And you as the reader pick up more and go, oh, the character doesn't see why this is important, but I do as the reader. And I'm starting to piece this puzzle together. That was so much fun, of a character underestimating this new person that comes into town. And you go, oh, I've been seeing some POVs. Like, I know what's going on. That tension was held so well through most of this book.
Some Shakespearean irony, like a little bit of
exactly
drama, yeah.
Mainly focusing around Baez and Giselle and Glockta. Kind of the investigation with Glockta going like, okay, who is the first of the Magi? And then we get context in both chapters. We learn a little bit about the mythical side of things, and Glockta's like, eh, who knows? And then we get to see Logan and go, oh, actually, some of that's probably true. All this back and forth, and we find out more about him. And so his introduction is just so intense, and you're waiting for it to drop. That's what I was so excited for.
Point of views coming together is a universal, definitely one of our favorites, but a universally loved trope as well. To have characters that you are invested in already meeting, which sometimes in series doesn't happen until books later, let alone a lot of them happen at the end of the book, and this is happening constantly.
And it's happening in insignificant ways, like a side character just seen in the background, and then you jump to a different it's played in such a way that normally the main POV that you're reading doesn't see the moment as important, but you know it is. Mm. And then it goes on. And you go, oh, that was such an important plot moment to happen. Like, oh, that there's something happening here. The character doesn't see it.
Damn, is First Law one of your favorite series?
Oh, yeah. I love First
Law. Do not talk about it enough.
I can't spoil things. This is a series with lots of spoilers. Can't talk too much about it.
Please don't do what you did in Mistborn. Don't spoil me. Don't do it.
When we talked about characters and things before,
yeah,
I couldn't talk about Logan Ninefingers to you in really any detail other than I loved his character, because any more details it would spoil it for one of the last chapters of this book. Mm. I can keep it to there.
Keep it there for this book. Okay. We'll go on to the next category. Do you want to talk any more emotion or
move? That sums it up.
Then thought-provokingness, the message themes, what'd you give thought-provokingness out of 5 stars?
4.5. I thought it was spectacular.
Wow. Okay. I was deciding between an NA, like not rating this category, but I ended up going with a neutral 3 out of 5 stars. Curious where the 4.5 is coming from.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Where to begin?
Wow. I'm fascinated. Okay.
God. Oh. I'm surprised you didn't, any?
Yeah, I think the main theme, that there's a quote I took from where part two began, and this is the quote that I think encapsulates the theme here. Life, the way it really is not a battle between good and bad, but between bad and worse. And really, a lot of the themes in this are being set up and teased at for First Law later in the series. As far as this book goes and the thought-provoking message looking back at, I think it sets an interesting theme and premise about not good versus bad, but bad versus worse, and some themes of isolation and themes that are set up. But it's not a lot of resolution or answers, or not even just answers. It's not like this book was aiming at something to leave me with. So I was just pretty neutral about it.
Every character for me gave me so much to think about So the nature of Glockta, of a torture victim who now tortures others. Why does he continue the cycle of violence? And I think it makes me go elsewhere. Of like, why is that the case? One, how good he is at twisting victims, but he also has this weird sense of justice. He does seem to actually somewhat care about the truth.
Okay.
That there's an there's a twisted logic that he has there, and it makes me think about the state, like victims perpetuating the cycle of violence. You have, in all honesty,
so the premise Jizal, of that was
the present made me think outside of this book of the nature of the cycle of violence and how can someone do such terrible things that have been already done to them. Then we have, I think I love the philosophy of Logan Nine Fingers, just how much of a seemingly coward he is, but he's practical. He's trying to outrun his past, but he's falling in the same steps, keeps making the same mistakes. I liked thinking about that quite a bit. You go further on, you're right, talk about the big things of worse, like it's not good and evil, it's bad and even worse.
Bad and worse, yeah.
I think that's done so well throughout this whole whole series. And a big moment for me that made me really think about it was West and his sister. The moment where he beats his sister, black and blue, and the complicated nature of this rageful man who does have some genuinely good qualities to him. He's set up as one of the only good people in this book, and then he does that to his own sister, and it's now he's relegated to, like, oh, this is one of the worst characters in this story right now, because we get to see him do this terrible thing. But also you see directly afterwards, not like how truly sorry he is and how ashamed he is of himself. Like it's not simple. he's done terrible things and he's ashamed of himself. How could he even do that to him? How could he do that to her in the first place? That left me thinking quite a bit. Bringing a bunch of these characters. So I loved thinking about this book and what this book has to say about people, about characters that we read. Loved it.
I agree with a lot about what you're saying with characters, and the characters were incredible. And I think the characters themselves made me invested, and they were so realized. And in the character section, we'll be agreeing with you on all of that. As far as the message or the themes with all of them, encapsulates the theme generally well. But I think as far as getting a reflection or theme from that, like that abuse scene, for example, was a character moment and complex. Like, okay, that's the way he functions. And I guess I'm thinking about the character. I'm thinking about the character's motivations, flaws, wants, needs, all those things that make a character so amazing. Mm-hmm. But then theme-wise, thought-provoking-wise, I guess what I'm just going, okay, The Blade itself, when I go back to this book, will I be thinking about is this the epitome or the pinnacle of not just grim, dark, but those themes it's encapsulating? I think a lot of what you're saying, I put all in characters, are very interesting, fascinating, amazing characters. For thought-provokingness, it's not leaving me with something. It's not leaving me with something other than a theme that's there. I think, to me, it felt not like that he has something to say, almost like Dungeon Crawler Carl, Brook 1, like setting up the scene of, okay, here's this tone of the world and here's the types of characters we have. Just let me cook a little bit and watch for book 2, 3. What I feel like my theme or the answer to the reflection of the first law will happen by book 3. I don't know if this is muddying your thought process at all, because maybe you're thinking
possibly
about first law in whole, because I've only read book 1. So for me, it's like a lot of setup themes. Maybe you're thinking of the trilogy going, okay, I know where, like, I see the themes encapsulated because I have all the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's hard to distinguish. Or do you think you're keeping it to book 1? Am I being unfair?
Not completely unfounded, but the overall umbrella of the whole theme of bad versus worse.
Yeah.
I think is, if you leave it there, like that's the world, bad versus worse.
Yeah.
I think each character delves into that theme specifically in different aspects that made me think about different qualities of human nature outside of the character themselves. I thought they were good examples that I pulled from. Like, normally a great character, like, they're unique in their own way. I think these are good example characters, and it added to the theme of the whole story. That's why it's deeply tied to the characters. I think, the thought-provokingness of it. But I think it lends so much to the theme that it's done so well. So that's why I think it is spectacular to think about.
Then let's agree on characters and go to that score.
Fair enough.
If you want to do characters, what'd you give that out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 4.75. Just shy.
I'm shocked.
I had to leave room. It's book one. It's book
one. You didn't leave room for emotion.
Nope.
Or the overall score.
Nope.
And I completely agree. I also gave a 4.75 out of 5 stars. Absolutely spectacular characters for this book.
I was tempted to give it a 5, but I was like, you know what? There's room. I can't give it on the first one.
I was tempted too. I was very tempted.
Little tease here. There's probably going to be a 5-star character score in the sequel books. Shocking.
So it looks like I might have scored it correctly then, if, seeing what the future books are. I don't know. I've
read
them.
As long
but...
as you're, say, the same score as me.
Of course.
You're saying it correctly.
Of course, of course. Yeah. This is so weird, you rating books higher. It's, so it's a weird feeling. So for the characters, where do we begin? I mean...
Where do you want to start?
Glockta. Let's start with,
Let's start with Glockta.
Maybe before, we kind of hinted at all of our previous answers here of why we love the characters. So instead of, before going specific to Glockta, Logan, etc., why are all the characters executed well? What is it about them as a whole that Abercrombie does well before we go micro? Yeah, like nailing that on the head. What is it?
Number one is character voice. Each one has a very distinct way of talking. So each POV is written in a slightly different fashion. And dialogue is done a little differently. For example, we have Glockta. His inner monologue is interspersed between his regular lines of dialogue. It's very snappy. Of he has punchlines to his own setup jokes. Of he'll say something to someone. He'll say half the sentence, and then the second half of that sentence is a joke. But it's in his own head. That's a constant theme of his personality. We have Logan Ninefingers, of fairly quiet in thought and in actions and actual words, but he has a lot of reflective thoughts. The narrator says this, but it's kind of in his own voice, of the whole thing of, say one thing about Logan Ninefingers. Say that he's patient. That he's a survivor. There's a weird sense of distance he has with his own thoughts. And he's a very, clearly, a fairly wise man in street smarts type of deal. Like, he's perceptive. He thinks things through. It's interesting to see him. But then you see Giselle. It's a different perspective of, you just are so present in his head of how vain he is. And it's different. He's not as sharp. He's not as witty as someone like Glockta. He's not as wise as someone like Logan in this book, especially. Like, you see that difference. And that voice is so clear between all three.
And Bookborn made a good point on her review like 3 years ago. It was kind of refreshing seeing what people were talking about the book. And she was saying how even without the idiosyncrasies of Glockta in her monologue, you can start reading a chapter and know right away who the character is. That instantly, even without the inner monologue where she get to with Glockta stuff, just the way the chapters are even written. And something that I appreciated as well with all these characters throughout is you see constantly flaws, wants, needs that you need for a character to be good. Maybe, hey, things can happen differently. There's different types of books, but generally speaking, flaws, wants, needs. What Joe Abercrombie seems to do, why I'm attached to these characters and feel like I understand them, is motivation. Not even knowing their backstory completely, but motivation for each of the characters, even with Glockta's motivation being, why am I doing this, is Glockta's motivation. But every action the character makes, no matter what, throughout the entire book, is always understandable from their point of view, because I understand them as people. I understand their motivations, the way they function, how their gears are turning, and they all feel like they've got different gears that are turning. One of the complaints of Lucas, hey Lucas, Lucas from Patreon, one of his complaints about the book, which is a valid complaint, is that it's a valid complaint about most books, in fact. It's hard to find this as a case, but he saw the characters as very archetypal, that you could describe them in a few words. And I will say to the person that doesn't like the characters here, technically speaking, you could define You could find Logan Nine Fingers as the retired badass trying to get away from his past. You could define Giselle as the man with an ego, Pharaoh as the rageful, the slave who wants revenge. Like you could kind of put that word on them. And I'd say to be careful with when, at least when I'm talking about characters and rating characters, then we could get micro talk about Glockt and all them. Mm-hmm. When I'm saying the characters are amazing, I think even a character that you can dumb down to a word or two, which I think there's a lot more to the characters here. It's more than that. But most characters in books you could put down to an archetype. Most plots you could put down to an archetype. We had an episode here talking about the 10 stories, the 10 types of plots. Every story, really, you can just go like, oh, it's this kind of thing. We could say, oh, Joe Abercrombie, it's just basically A Song of Ice and Fire, but this. It's not, I guess it's not, they're more than just the words that could describe them. It's their constant actions, motivations, and feeling like they live off the page, which he does amazingly, I think.
To give that a point of, you think, take Pharaoh, and this is trying to give a steel man this position of her being more of a side character in this book, even though we do get her POVs, but we don't get as many with her than the others. Her just being reduced to the vengeful, rageful former slave that wants revenge.
Nothing wrong with a Darrow.
The thing is, you couldn't imagine putting Darrow and replacing Pharaoh with Darrow.
No.
Like, their names are similar.
They're different characters.
It doesn't work. They're different at all. Pharaoh is necessary. It's hard for me to imagine a different character other than Pharaoh in her position, and the same applies to every single one of them.
When we're talking about characters, we're saying, how replaceable are these characters? Can you replace Glockta?
No.
Let's start with Glockta, because these are characters you can't just interplace and put Glockta and fill in another book from some other series and then put in Glockta's place. They are not the same person. A character archetype done poorly is, you could go, oh, that's the wise wizard character, the wise mentor. No, Baez is different than just the typical mentor character, wise wizard. Yeah. Glockta first. Okay. Strap in for a long episode, everybody.
Yeah, this is going to be the bulk.
Let's just say, sit back, relax, enjoy a ramble. If you've read this is for you nerds out there who love The Blade Itself like us, because this is going to be a lot.
Yeah, I'm leaning back in the chair.
Let's enjoy this. Okay. Glockta.
Glockta. The intro to Glockta is so memorable to this day. It's one of the best intros to a character, period. Of this tortured cripple just trying to conquer his greatest enemy, stairs. And every step it's described, you hear step, scratch, like, of his cane, and him out thinking, like, if I could torture just one person in the world, it would be the inventor of stairs. And how much he has to overthink his problems, of realizing it takes so much time for him to conquer stairs, so he has to think about his problems several steps in advance. Huh. And it... Yeah, I know, deliberate. Yeah. But that whole scene perfectly encapsulates the rest of his story, of why he has an advantage, why he is necessary to the story. Glockta is a man who thinks ahead. He has to think several steps ahead, because he's going to be slower than the rest getting up there. When his practical Severard comes around, it's like, hey, I got this chest, the chest of gold from the Mercers. It's like, Let me go into the boss's room. Coming in 5 minutes. Wait 5 minutes, then enter. But he's still trying to get up the stairs. Like, it's taking him a slow time. He has to plan that out, because he knows, oh, he's going to reprimand me because he's corrupt. He wants the money, the Mercer's money. I'm gonna bribe him with that money. So he has to think that far ahead for the goal. And maybe it's a small thing, but I love that, because that carries through the rest of the book. That's just the intro
chapter. Yeah. With Glockta having that consistent viewpoint of planning ahead and torturing victims from the get-go. It's this weird thing. I think Glockta encapsulates this the best, of why we're both, these are bad people, yet you're so invested. And since we're following them, I'm somewhat going, yeah, I don't want Glockta to die. I want to keep following Glockta.
Yeah.
I'm very invested in seeing some redemption, maybe not a redemption, a tragedy, whatever it is. I want to see it. I want to see this happen. For Glockta's character, it's one of those really interesting positions where you typically see the bad villain character torturing people and going, ah, you should don't treat others the way you want to be treated. Golden rule. Like, you're torturing them. How would you like it if you were tortured? Well, Glockta's torturing the victims, had it worse than any of them. So it's this weird feeling of, well, don't do that. Okay, that's wrong what you're doing, but also why are you doing it? It happened to you. Don't walk the walk. Don't just talk the talk.
And he tips it on his head. Is like, I know I'm good at torture because, like, I know exactly how it feels. I know exactly which buttons to push and how to get a most effective torture because I experienced it myself. And he uses, in a bizarre way, like, I'm thinking from his perspective of the once great Sandan Glockta being this hero of the army, this sword fighter who's, brave, gallant, this wonderful, noble hero of Ardjua. And then reduced to a cripple who can't wield a sword, has no, everyone treats him as this, treats him as a pariah.
Yeah.
What can he do? Because not all of his past experience is now irrelevant. It doesn't help him. What's the one experience in his past that now he can use for the future? It's his experience being tortured. It's the one thing he has expertise in that he can actually do something with.
And he doesn't feign courage, because that bravery where his backstory, he saved people, saved part of the army. And that's how he ended up getting tortured. Between that scene, from the torture scene itself, before we see present day Glockta, that he admits when he was being tortured, he just spilled the beans. He said everything. He wasn't brave enough to go like, I'm going to stand up against the torture. No, he cried, babbled, begged, told them everything, anything they wanted to hear. It was that awful. He didn't feign going like, I'm the kind of torturer who I was able to withstand it. No, it was horrid, horrible. He's disabled for life. He has a lisp for life. That's the least of his woes. And he's in pain, waking up in bed every morning, where typically with authors, debut authors, especially with J.O. Abercrombie's debut author, they say never to start a chapter with a waking up in the morning, because nothing interesting happens when you wake up in the morning. Okay, the character woke up in the morning, they looked and they saw the, cool world building element that you're info dumping, and then they saw this over there with a worse author. Whereas Glockta's character, waking up in the morning is even interesting.
Yeah,
because those simple portions where Glockta's character is more than just the plot happening around, where Glockta's character is just Glockta himself makes
just
everything
trying to get up.
Everything is interesting.
Wakes up and his body has been twisted in the night and has to he already soiled the bed sheets. He's lost that. Like, talk about how in Dagoska he didn't just lose his teeth. He lost his dignity. He can't even hold that anymore. They've taken everything from him.
Yeah.
And, waking up in the morning, just every little thing for Glockta is an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason why you're kind of rooting for him. He's the ultimate underdog in that sense.
Talking to one of our patrons who is disabled themselves, they loved Glockta's character. And I don't want to speak exactly for them, because something about Glockta's They've also read all three books, so I don't know what happens after book one, but the representation of disability and how living that kind of life is not for the faint of heart. So Glockta's character clearly, I think, is a lot of fan favorites, including us and a bunch at home. So do you want to move on to the next character before we beat Glockta to death? Well, that was pun not intended. before we go on to the next character, do you want to go to?
I do want to mention something of funny interest. I think this is deliberate on Joe's part. That this is absent your backstory. There's all these characters have done terrible things in their past, but actively on page, the characters that have done horrible things are bad people.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get 3-pound packs of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $2.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When we are reading them, in order kind of goes Glockta, Logan, then Giselle, right? In terms of Glockta's doing the most messed up shit on page, Then we have Logan fighting. We get more details about like this terrible things he's done. And then Giselle is just conceited, but ultimately has not done anything like too terrible, really, other than being a womanizer and looks at himself in the mirror for fun. That's his hobby. But I would say in the reverse order, we also have least funny to funniest, with Glockta being the worst character. I think he's also the funniest character. We get the most jokes out of him. With Logan, we also get a lot of funny moments. And I think Giselle has the least amount of just funny lines. It's fun to laugh at him at his expense, but he himself doesn't get a lot of humor. Giselle isn't funny himself, not a funny character. He's just pathetic in some aspects. So I find that interesting. He's trying to make you laugh the most at the most worst character. I think it was deliberate on his part, but I just wanted to mention that. I thought that was interesting.
It definitely seemed deliberate, where Glockta had the most inner monologue, which allowed Glockta to be funnier than other characters too, because we see more of Glockta's voice than others. Well, what did you think about Logan Nine Fingers?
Logan Nine Fingers is one of my favorite characters in fantasy. I love him. I liked him more than Glockta. Glockta's the better character.
Mm-hmm.
Fully acknowledged.
Even book one,
okay. He's the better character. Totally understand. I loved Logan more still. That's just a personal thing. I love the retired badass. Yep. I think he encapsulates it to a T. Exactly what I'm looking for in a character trope of the retired badass, this history behind it, but also trying to get away from it. But you get to see behind the curtain of everyone seeing the monster of the Bloody Nine. And then you see how analytical he can be and how very humble he really is. He's this badass fighter, never lost a fight, and yet against small-time thugs, he's thankful to be alive. I love it. Love it. Beware of old men in industries where the good die young. So, what are your thoughts?
This is your pinnacle of your retired badass.
This is the top, the peak of the retired badass.
When we're talking about irreplaceability of characters too, there's another retired badass character in Kings of the Wild, and it was the main character's name. I'm forgetting the main character's name. Do you remember? It started with a C, but retired badass character in Kings of the Wild.
Yeah.
So that character, so I'm thinking you have others with that archetype, but Logan does it really well. And I think for this book, Logan wasn't my favorite character. I think that I like all those aspects, and especially the end scene as well was pretty freaking awesome. But I like the setup, and I'm curious more on his backstory, because finding out he fought for Beth-Odd and was this just dominant fighter. I think I feel the same as Logan as I did for, this is really not spoilers, so very light on this, Stormlight with Dalinar in book one of Stormlight, and Logan in book one here. So Dalinar was my favorite character book one of Stormlight already. I could see why Logan's your favorite here, though. Dalinar book one of Way of Kings in Stormlight Archive, not saying anything beyond like Dalinar in book one. Kaladin was your main character in book one. Dalinar had a presence, but he didn't, you know, you see in later books what happens. I feel the same as Logan right now in book one. I'm like, okay, I got the aura of Logan Nine Fingers. We'll see what happens in the future.
It definitely, a lot of it comes to the ending. So I love the setup of one we get from so many of the different POVs, especially from the Dogmen, and you get to see the history behind the mythos of the Bloody Nine, of how many people he slaughtered, he's fought for Beth-Odd, he's won against armies, the ferocious nature that people are so terrified of him. If you get to see people like Black Dao, who is just this vicious, evil man, like not afraid of anything and just terrible, but he's terrified of the Bloody Nine, and Bloody Nine beat him. And you just get to see that. It just, all these stacks ups of like, oh man, the Bloody Nine. Everyone's terrified of him. And then when you do see Logan fight, and initially you go, okay, why is he so terrifying? And then you see him win these fights in such an analytical manner, and you know, always comes out on top. And you go, I see why he's the Bloody Nine. Everyone's wrong about him being a monster. He's just really good. He's a cautious man. He thinks out, like, I understand why he's considered a monster, because he wins all the time. Yeah. Okay, completely get it. But inside, he's very much an analytical man.
Yeah, yeah.
And then second to last chapter.
Fantastic, right.
I was already satisfied with him as a character of going like, oh, what a cool line. But then... you're gonna give
there blood. Was blood on him, but that was good. There was always blood, but he was kneeling, and that was wrong. The Bloody Nine kneels to no man. His fingers sought out the cracks between the stones of the fireplace, pricing between the old tree roots, pulling him up. His leg hurt, and he smiled. Pain was the fuel that made the fires burn. Something moved in front of him. Masked men, enemies. Corpses, then.
And that's just the intro of
another quote. Something dug into the Bloody Nine's back, but there was no pain. It was a sign, a message in a secret tongue that only he could understand. It told him where the next dead man was standing.
Oh,
this is so good. so hyped. That was the seed that like blew me away. I was already satisfied with him. I was kind of like, I like Logan. He's fun to follow. Everyone kind of misunderstands him. And then going, oh, he's not misunderstood. He's perfectly understood. I didn't get it. I did not see the signs. Oh my God, he is a monster. And I love it. So much fun to follow and so interesting. Gotta love it.
I can't wait to see what a 5-star character looks like for you.
I should give it a 5-star, but I'm just going like, there's more. There's more it can do. I know it can. I've read the other books. It feels not fair.
So it's not there's not a character you dislike. I was invested in all the characters.
Same. I think other characters, there's some that are really good, but not amazing. That's the only
thing. Mainly, if I had a complaint, like, why don't I give it the 5? Like, Pharaoh was interesting. Like the
exactly, that's my point.
And the fact that Pharaoh was a main point of view. I'm like, okay, what? She's mysterious. I'm excited to see where that goes. West, good. I think he really shined at the abuse scene because that made him complex in his background of, okay, what was his father like? The
roller coaster ride of he's the character you like the most, and then suddenly he's the character you like the least.
Yeah, so that was fascinating. And
wonderful.
Giselle, and I think you put it really well, laughing at him rather than with him.
I was laughing with him in the one scene where he's talking to himself, inner monologue about Audie, and he's going through this forbidden love story, and he's finally convincing himself.
RD, sorry.
So he's talking with RD, and he's finally convincing himself, talking in his head, going, okay, no, I can't marry her. No, that wouldn't be good, because the reputation that would do for her. I just can't do that. She's not a noble. She's not high enough class. I also can't just forget about her. I do have these feelings for her. I mean, you know what? Maybe I should propose. Yes, that's it. I should propose. Maybe I get the benefits of being in a relationship with her, but I don't. I get the benefits of being with her physically, but not the consequences of being in a relationship with her. Maybe we could just do something for fun. No, I can't do that. Like, essentially, inner monologuing, trying to convince himself to get, like, a fuck buddy, friends with benefits, and just Giselle being so into himself in this weird, I could see his character so vividly.
He's so conceited.
And then eventually just goes like, no, I can't do that. So it's just very interesting. So even with our three main point of views with Logan, Giselle, and Glock, the all fantastic, phenomenal. Then you have the supporting, I would even call them, I guess, secondary characters for this, of West and Pharaoh and Dogman, the pack and tree, and the whole pack of
Baez
Logan's.
Yes. Being an important.
Oh, same also, thing. Yeah. Also Baez. Baez. I love his personality of how he's so unbothered. There's things greater than what's going on right here.
He's a mystery and a half.
Yeah.
There's one, I will actually layer in for his character specifically. The plot is so tied to him that that's what I enjoyed. The B plot is his. Every single character is tied to Baez in this book. And that's the plot. So everything else is kind of chaos. Everyone's doing their own thing, whatever. But the actual overall plot of this book is...
He's moving the pieces.
Moving the pieces, and you have the job as the reader to figure out how, why, and what's the purpose. So we'll get into that a little later. But
did you want to move on from characters? Because we have, there's others like Kwai, Frost, Lord Chamberlain Hoff, the pretentious Hoff, who is basically acting as the king. And you have Bethod, who we don't know too much about yet. The Navigator, Gorst, any of those characters. Audie.
I liked Audie quite a bit. And there's not much of her, but she just has this wit about her and this deep sadness of purpose. Like, she, you keep seeing her in scenes of, she seems to be just waiting around. There's not much to do. And she comes out when she's, you know, has the fight with her brother. And her brother beats her and going, you just abandoned me here. Like, you only care about your reputation. Like, what the hell am I going to do? I'm just here. I just exist. I can do nothing. There's nothing. No one needs me. I'm just to sit here all day doing nothing. What is my purpose? And that no one really cares about her. Just
that's a theme in the book too, of a lot of characters not knowing what their purpose is.
Yeah.
So,
but I really liked her character as well.
Yeah. She, and her dialogue was great, and her interactions with Giselle, and
also I just love her playing with Giselle. It's great.
Yes.
Of how it's kind of a funny thing of, it's clearly just some fun for her of, she's bored.
Giselle was trying to find what, he didn't want to do this duel. And then all of a sudden when she said to him, like, yeah, you should quit. Giselle then thinks, wait a second. Now that she doesn't want me to do that, I will, to prove her wrong. So the way she pulls him, I think the words that Giselle says, he says this is his quote, the difference between misery and happiness was her word.
Yeah.
What she says, Giselle's like, oh, that's how I feel now. So he's so love struck. And since we got Giselle's inner monologue and seeing his interactions with her, it wasn't from a third person perspective of looking off to that insta love characters over there. We saw every movement of Giselle's gears turning of why he felt this step by step. And also cool contemplation of the fact that it's West's sister and what that does. So fun stuff. Do you want to move on to plot?
Yeah.
We didn't beat characters too much, so that's not too bad. Okay. Plot out of 5 stars. Yes. Plot out of 5 stars. What'd you give it?
Give it a 5. Standing on the line. It's really a 4.5, but it's a 5, damn it.
Honestly, I respect it. I have had to defend Red Rising to my mother's grandparents who are long deceased. You know, I go to, I at night, they're the only people that agree with me. Mom, pop, who are like 172 probably. They're the only one. Anyways, I don't know if you're speaking to anybody that out there, but to me, I'm very curious on, I think I have a good idea of why, but why was this plot? Oh, I gave it a 3 out of 5 stars. I gave it a flat neutral. Neutral plot for me. I think I see why, but explain. Why was this a 5-floored plot for you?
Sure. Okay.
Okay.
To defend myself. Because everyone I've talked to disagrees with me on this point.
I
completely.
Disagree.
Yep. I understand. I think even Joe Abercrombie disagrees with me. But overall, if we take a micro plot of each character, I enjoyed every character's journey and where they're going and the setup to what is going to come. So incredibly invested in every single chapter of what's going to happen to them, leaving that great mystery. But ultimately, the reason why I love the plot is how everything came together. And it all focuses on Baez. Every single chapter, learn a nugget about the world that gives us more context of why things are happening and gives you anticipation of what's to come. Like, what is a plot other than seeing the puzzle pieces and anticipating what's going to come next? The promise and then the payoff. Promise, progress, payoff. That's a plot. The promise is hidden. Kind of all the time. And the progress is even more hidden in the background. It's always just a little side character. It's moments where Glockta sees the statue of Baez. Sees him first. We see Logan meet Baez. And we don't really know what to think of him. We don't. We go, he's possibly a wizard. Seems pretty powerful. But we don't know who he is, really. What is his significance? Kind of just a magic wizard. Who knows? Then we see Glockta's point of view of the statue of the first of the
first of the Magi.
First of the Magi. And you go, oh, a bit more context. Baez is actually pretty important, pretty significant figure, actually established the kingdom. Huh. And he's going south. Why is he going back? And that is where we're picking up all these different pieces. Mm-hmm. And then another big through line is the duel. From the first scene with Giselle, we get this duel coming up. Hey, there's this big fight. It's the champion's duel. How are we going to fare? And every single POV kind of adds a bit more to the anticipation. We learn a little bit more about the fighters. We learn a bit more about magic. Giselle not trusting in other people. How does Artie affect him? West, we see Logan Nine Fingers of how he sees Giselle, of going like, hey, it's good, but like, hey, it's not great. And we see how Giselle always underestimates the better fighters. Constantly kind of, he's not a good judge of character. Then we see the actual duel scene of, you know that, oh, Giselle's going to lose. He is screwed. Because we see all these better fighters. We get to see how Giselle fights, and then we see how the Northmen fight. And we see how bloody it is and how much better fighters the Northmen are. Then we get to the duel. Giselle is screwed. And I'm looking forward to him losing. And then Baez. Baez and Glockta. Glockta sees what's going on. If Baez is manipulating something. And he makes a Giselle win. Why? Is it for a little bet? There's little things, hints at the media after conversation that is little teases of mystery more to come. Everything laid out all the way after that scene, we get more with House of the Magi, or the House of the Maker, sorry. House of the Maker, of him opening it up and going, oh, what's the majesty of this? All the confusion, mystery. Everything along that line, and then ultimately coming down to the very end of Baez has been setting up all these events and ultimately played everything for going to get this seed. They're preparing to go on a journey. Ultimately, he's building the Fellowship. I mean, Fellowship of the Ring, it's kind of a midway point. Would you call Fellowship of the Ring a really bad plot? I wouldn't think so. This is the setup for the Fellowship. And so you see, the whole story was Baez setting up the Fellowship.
Like the first half of Lord of the Rings.
The first book, because they go off. So,
well, the first half, and Fellowship, they come together half, and midpoint, then they go, and then after the halfway point, they break up by the end of the Fellowship. Yeah.
Yeah. But
which is, I think, the big difference here. Well, say one thing about Richard. Say he rambles, okay? which I think maybe is one of the big complaints here, because with this book feels a lot like setup for what will happen in book two and book three. I didn't dislike the plot. I think that with that B plot with Baez putting people together, pulling them, I see why you can like that, get the nuggets out of it. That makes sense. I think with that Fellowship of the Ring analogy, where we get the Fellowship to come together, they go on their journeys, it feels like a big setup. Like, okay, now the story is starting. Book two going in. Okay, they're together. Where's the story going now? I think the big complaint, at least my complaint for it, is with that promise, progress, payoff piece. What else is a plot other than promise, progress, payoff? Is for this book, rightfully so, I don't know what I'm promised. I don't know what I'm promised. And so when the payoff comes, or where the characters come and interact, I'm so deeply invested in the characters. They're going around, and why it feels like meandering to me is there's a lot of moments that happen and I don't know what the book is leading and concluding to. And in order for a payoff to pay off plot-wise, I have to know what my expectations were. And although expectations can be good or bad, meaning a great plot, you could have your expectations for what you were promised, and then it exceeds those expectations. It did, okay, that I thought it was going that way, that's what happens. Or it subverts your expectations, and you go, wow, I thought it was going this way, plot twist happened, and that's even better than what I thought it would be. I think the big meandering thing with this plot is the payoff is neither like exceeding or going below, because I didn't know what to expect. I was just kind of experiencing this with the characters. So the ultimate conclusion to that promise is like, okay, I don't know exactly what I was promised. There's setup happening and the end happens. I'm like, all right, there's great moments. There's great moments that happen. But then ultimately, was I paid off, or this progress that happened? Kind of, I look at it as in this book was really great because those characters were able to be so magnetic and be so off, realize and off the page. I didn't care what they were doing. They could have been clipping their toenails and I'd be reading the book. But then the plot movements itself was like, okay, whatever happens in this book, great characters. And ultimately, I don't know where this is going. But now that the book has ended, I feel like the book two plot going forward will be less meandering and will be more like, okay, from the start, I kind of know I'm promised something like this. So
sure.
I think that's the overall thought.
Overall, I think the ultimate promise is the mystery. Mystery of Baez and what this world is about, and something is coming to a head. What is it? Who is pulling the strings? That is kind of the plot.
It feels like the payoff is also mystery because I'm still mysterious about it. So it's like promising mystery,
the big
paying off with more.
Big mystery is Baez and the rest of the world, because Baez is clearly tied to, like, with the Gurkish. We get little nuggets of like, yeah, there's some kind of conflict between there. We have the Northmen, like the war looming. Like, we have all these big things that's kind of the overall big world things that are going to happen and come to a head. And I think this plot of this book is what are Baez's plans? I think every character gives us more about that. And then each individual character has their own kind of plot and promise. So for Logan, what is his promise? Ultimately, the promise of his character from the very beginning is he's this monster of a fighter that is trying to get away from it all. And we get to hear everyone going like, oh, he is this monster. And then we see Logan and we don't really see why. The end, I think we're paid off with the plot of like, oh, I see why he's a monster. And it, so for me, the promise of who he is, the payoff was great. With Giselle, we get, for most of his story, is the promise of this duel. And all the different characters of how he underestimates, he gets to see different elements in the story. We get to get a little bit more about Glockta and Baez through his ignorance. And then we see, oh, he's screwed of who he's fighting. And that all of that leads to the duel, which is important, and so tense, anxiety, and then sword drops. And so
emotionally that stuff pulled.
We get, I thought, great payoff of the consequences of that duel and what is Baez's intentions. Then Glockta, it was probably the more traditional, I guess, of plot of ultimately set up. He's got his job to do and investigate what's going on.
Mystery,
with,
yeah.
Just two main investigations, right? Basically the Mercers, the Guild. Ultimately, he's doing power plays for the throne and helping out his boss. And then lastly is investigating Baez. And like, hey, he's a threat to our power. Investigate him. Let's try and discredit him.
Yeah.
Those are two things, relatively straightforward. Found out more information. But ultimately, I felt I was paid off from the promises I was initially giving my characters. And ultimately, the big plot of what are Baez's plans? And I think we got that.
I think I'm still mysterious about what those plans are. So I think I was promised and paid off with, like, still mystery happening. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens in the future books. For those characters, maybe it meandered more for me. I'm invested in whatever scene they're doing because they're great. But then with Glockta's character, for example, from the very get-go, we're seeing this character who is going, why do I do this? And the very end is, why do I do this? Just seeing like, okay, we're still same point internally of what Glockta's arc is going to be, seeing where that's going. And with Logan Nine Fingers, yes, the payoff of the Berserk moment. And with Giselle, for example, I think some of the fun meandering, I guess why I enjoyed the characters too, is even Giselle's purpose is just, he's kind of conceited and does this and then has conversation with Artie. And that conversation, he then finds a purpose like, oh no, I will do the duel to, in spite of her. A lot of the plot is very reactive of, okay, what scene and moment happens that alters their motivation a bit. For example, we see with Glockta at the very end, when West comes and asks Glockta for some help, we find out that West in the past actually did come to see Glockta twice, but Glockta's mother turned him away, then the servant turned him away, and all of a sudden Glockta's like, West, I'm with you. So it's a lot of the plot that spawns is character interaction happens and it goes in a direction.
Those moments that you don't think are important ultimately are connected to Baez. Lot of things is like when Giselle is going off and just talking to Artie. Think, okay, character moment. But then Artie says something of what book she's been reading. And you go, oh, that seems important for later. Glockta going around and doing his investigations, going, oh, that seems important for later. And then it comes through. It comes through. But that those seeds are planted, and enough of them are paid off in book one, mainly centering around the duel itself and the very, very end of what they're searching for. Because we get, I believe it's from Ardy and a little bit from Glockta about the search for the seed. Something about the seed.
Yeah, Pharaoh is like the key to that. There's some...
Each one... So all of these little details that the characters are serving this overarching plot of what is Baez doing. That's the plot. And so all those little details of like, oh, it feels like we're meandering, but we are gaining knowledge
from it's all like a mystery, but we don't know what the mystery is yet. So by the end of the book, we find out, okay, the mystery is this.
Yeah.
Rather than...
The first book is to figure out what the mystery was.
Which is why I think it meanders. Like it's like instead of it starting off with, okay, there's this mystery, we're going to unravel it. It's okay, let's first build the puzzle. I think that why this is such a setup book is, okay, we need to build the puzzle pieces before we put them together. And this is the crafting the puzzles portion. Let's get these together. And
pretty early on, the promise progress payoff.
Yep.
What's Baez doing? That's promise. Then progress is finding out all the details about Baez through all these other characters. Then payoff is, oh, he's on the hunt for this seed. He's getting these crew to get this crew together.
Yeah, but I still know what details. It is and everything. I still don't know. Like he was doing.
But that's the payoff.
He was doing mysterious stuff. Still is doing mysterious stuff. I just don't think it's
there's paid more. Off yet. It's not totally paid off. It's still book one. We don't get the final thing, but we know what he's searching for. We know that, oh, he's manipulating these events. And by the end, we've seen how much he has manipulated.
Okay, yeah.
That's ultimately, that's what we get from this one.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too, like the book, let's say, the book on its own, of course, doesn't stand as it can't read on its own in a way. It's incomplete in that sense, whereas maybe I also appreciate books like a Way of Kings, where there's a complete, it's self-contained, but also an epic story where you need to read book two to continue with the characters and the overarching story. The plot inside of this book seemed like the goal of the book was get these characters together, ultimately, which I'm a big fan of the trope of point of views coming together, and that happening even earlier on in the book was, ooh, fun. Like that a lot. The ultimate goal was getting the Fellowship together. It's like writing the first half of Fellowship of the Ring, in a sense, you know? It's like, okay, setting that up and letting these characters go off and prosper. I see why you loved it. I mean,
I'll also give the non-spoiler part of this.
Yeah, but please, non-spoiler.
I'm not spoiling anything, but after reading the trilogy, seeing all of the foreshadowing and all the nuggets they lay down in the beginning, ooh, well thought out. As a complete trilogy, there's a lot of great setup here. And so it's impressive on a plotting standpoint of he's setting up so many great things to come. And I like how he did it in this first book. Not giving any details of it, but that is why I also upped my score on plot for after rethinking it and after reading the full series.
I don't doubt he set up a lot. I agree with you. He set up a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see what happens after that. You know, these with book ones, there is a lot of setup. I think self-contained wise didn't pay off as much. However, saying that, Joe Abercrombie, I have a line here from, do you think Joe Abercrombie's a plotter or a pantser? What would you guess? If you had to guess when he wrote this book.
He seems like a plotter.
He's a plotter who turned into a pantser over time. So when he wrote the First Law, he says he is in the former camp. He more so plotted his books with First Law, and he knew where the story was going. However, when he started writing Best Served Cold, which is after this trilogy, he started to become more of a pantser. So he kind of is in both camps with his later books. So I'm curious to see how that shifts his plots overall. But I think that's where we stand on plot. Did you have anything else to say on it? Or
yeah.
Say more.
I don't want to say it's not really a spoiler, but it's just a general thought on his writing style.
Oh, that would be pros. Yeah.
Sure. But complaints on the plot here.
Yeah.
It's funny to me that there is one of his individual books later on in the book that to me is almost in one book, he does the entire trilogy. Structure wise and plot wise, like everything that you like is just condensed into one.
I like that.
It's weird. Anyway, we'll get to that book later.
We'll get to that. So that is plot section. Five star.
I'll stand by it.
I respect it.
I'll fight you.
I'll fight my Red Rising five stars all day. I appreciate it. Okay. Next one is World Building out of five stars. What'd you give World Building?
I could convince to lower it for the book one, but all the stuff I'm talking about and seeing all the things that are laid out for future books and how much little nuggets that you don't think are important are important later, I give it a 4.5. I think it's spectacular. Score. Spectacular world building of definitely getting you intrigued in the world and what this is, laying all the mysteries out, how everything fits together. I thought it was great.
You know, I'm not going to hard disagree with you because something like The Will of the Many, that book, sorry for mentioning other books, but not spoiling stuff like that either. Will of the Many has a magic system that really intrigued me. I know it's not like your 10 out of 10 world building, 5 out of 5 world building, but I like the setup in Will of the Many that the mystery itself was enough to pull me and be invested in that magic system. For this one, I'd say, you know, I'll up it and pre just kind of thinking about the book. Now I gave it a 3.75. I'll say four star because I'm just thinking about it going like I'm very invested in the mystery going forward.
You're invested in the world.
There's something going on. I'll say four star. Yeah. I'll say four.
And ultimately, I think the two big cultures we get a third with Pharaoh, but we get the Northmen and then Ardua. Like, I think they're done really well of seeing the differences between the two. And it's kind of interesting that we see the more civilized people. You come to dislike them a little bit more than the Northmen, who are more savages. Like, they're more brutal, the savage, this kind of tribesman mentality.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they seem like much close, like the Dogmen and his group seem like a much closer and better friends together, except Black Dow. But there's a sense of honor between them that the, you know, the civilized group doesn't have.
Mm.
And there's something admirable about them, especially them being more practical, brutal fighters where, you know, Dazal cares about the style and the form and the fancy. But, you know, Three Trees is like, all right, we're going to go on the signal. What's the signal?
Well, I don't know.
You'll know it when you see it. But it's all just practical stuff of like, there's no good way to kill. It's just don't die. Kill, like, survive.
Right.
That there is no honorable way of fighting. There's just killing. And there's something honest about them in that way. They're not trying to glorify it, really. They're not against it, but they're just kind of like, this is the way it is. There's some honesty to that, rather than all the nobles are trying to make it a glorious thing, you know? Oh, like watching people suffering and going, oh, it doesn't matter. Where at least the Northmen like acknowledge it, commit it, but they don't say it's a good thing. I don't know. I like those different cultures.
I know you're a fan of cultures and world building stuff.
So. Yeah. And then, of course, all the mystery behind the history of this world and what is Baez's role in it. What is the Gurkish doing? Like, oh, my God. What?
It's cool to see Baez as the figure in this world who's actually alive and knows all the history. It's like, he's been there. Day one. Ask him. Usually you're mythical figures in the past and you can find it out through ancient text and scripture and the old scrolls you can unravel. No, just...
He's there.
Hey, Baez. Question for anybody.
Question for you. How did this city come to be? Oh, well.
Say one thing. Shut up, Logan. Just gets pissed off. The mystery in this, I think a big thing, the tone was obviously really good. Gave that grimdark feel, which I think to the world and giving that atmosphere, great. And the mystery with Baez, finding out what the first law is about not speaking with devils. The second law of not eating man. Why are those laws? What is going on? Who are the Magi? Asking a bunch of questions about the world that I'm clearly invested in. And the
House of the Maker.
House of the Maker. What is that? The whole history behind Baez and the Maker's daughter. And I'm very invested in all that mystery going forward, which is a testament to like, okay, the world building that was here wasn't heavy handed in your face. It wasn't like there was info dumps and pages going on about the cultures. It was very much character introduced world where the characters and the way they acted and interacted with one another revealed the world, which is the way I love world building to be unraveled, when it doesn't have to just be, here's the text, here's the ancient text. Rather, we see with Pharaoh and her Magi, and we see with
Yulwe.
Yulwe, thank you. We see with Pharaoh and Yulwe, and we see with Logan and Baez, and through them, we see there's something, some mystery brewing here and something about the world.
We even get it through Artie. When she's reading the book, she talks to Glockta and she talks to Giselle about some stuff that she's been reading about the first of the Magi. We get even from even the tiny characters. So we get more from the Dogmen in the North of the Shankers. Like, what are they? And they're coming from the
Shanka.
The Shanka. Yeah. Anyway, we get more from them about what these beasts are, and then from the House of the Maker. Logan smells the Shanka and going like, this place smells fine. And
we find out they're made of clay, metal, and leftover flesh.
Yeah.
So what are the Shanka? And
yeah,
also very interested in the north and south that they're going off to, of who is Bethod and who is just, what's going on in this world? I think
villains of like Valentin Bulk, of now the bigger mystery of like, what's this bank? Like, these seem to have a lot of influence. Like, what's going on here?
What is going on?
So, tons of,
and the tone was great. So I think overall, great world.
Yeah,
introduced this in a good way.
Hindsight being, you know, read the rest of the series. There's so much more in this world building that, like, it was satisfying to see that of how much he laid for the world. And
but you're still feeling your 4.5.
Yeah, if there's a testament to world building being like, hey, does it suck you in? Are you immersed in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm immersed. I'm constantly trying to find out new things. I feel like it's real. The history is there. The cultures are there. Fantastic.
Right. Do you want to go on to pros?
All righty.
Pros out of 5 stars.
4.5. Thought it was spectacular.
I also get 4.5.
Yeah.
Spectacular pros.
He is an amazing writer. Well done dialogue. Again, this goes to his plot, but his overall pros of him being able to tell me more about the character while pushing the plot along, while giving me more world building in a not ham-fisted way, and then also just making me laugh or cry or just get excited. He does everything all together.
Not to mention his action scenes are just kick-ass.
They are kick-ass.
And the way
best action you've read.
I've never had an easier time listening to a book where it was sounded and read cinematic. Well, I've read this physically and audio. I did both. And when reading either way, I could picture it, visualize it. The action scenes itself knew exactly what was happening, and very vivid, very vivid. And also I would almost compare it to these action scenes reminded me of the thrill and excitement I got and how it was written from like Sword of Kaigan. The way Sword of Kaigan wrote some action scenes, like Joe Abercrombie does it just as well too. And his in-between scenes are just as impressive. The inner monologue scenes, the character voice, very important. Honestly, I'm probably going to raise it over time for pros. This is my gut reaction rating, but I thought it was spectacular. And yeah, nothing bad to say other than I have this for you, Rich. I have a little game.
Okay.
I created, okay? The game is, can you tell the character by the quote?
Okay. I probably can.
And I will be very monotone with how I say this so I don't give away my inflection like, oh, it's a Logan voice or it's a Glockta voice.
Again, I didn't reread the book. I read chapter summaries. So
you read this several years ago. 2022
of actually reading the book.
Yep.
So I shouldn't be able to do this.
So I got 4 quotes for you. Play at home if you want to as well. I'll read it for you all, and I'm going to be very monotone to see if you can tell who the character is, okay?
Okay.
Every man has his excuses, and the more vile the man becomes, the more touching the story has to be. What is my story now, I wonder?
That's Glockta.
That is Glockta. Ding, 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 ding. As you get it at home. Okay, the second one. Are you ready?
I was torn between Glockta and Logan for a brief moment. I was going to go, gut was like, Glockta. But I was like, maybe
give
Logan.
It a second. Is it a trick question? You know?
And I was like, no, lock it in.
Lock Glockta. It in. Gut reaction. I like it. Thinking is cringe, as long as democracy. And if you want t-shirts like Teeter My Totter, like Rich Teeters, he Teetered My Totter, that plot. Back and forth, 5 and 3. That's a Teeter My Totter right there. Which one? I don't know. Go buy the t-shirt. TeeterApple.com. Okay. The next one is, the more you learn, the more you realize how little you know. Still, the struggle itself is worthwhile. Knowledge is the root of power after all.
That's Logan.
No.
Damn it.
No. Baez.
Oh.
Knowledge, yeah, and come on. Yeah. I tried to give a little gimme there. All right. This next one.
Okay.
Can you go? This would be 2 for 3 if you get this.
Okay.
But that was Civilization, so far as Blank could tell. People with nothing better to do, dreaming up ways to make easy things difficult.
Pharaoh.
No.
Damn it. Why?
What is wrong with you?
What?
It's Logan.
Oh.
Damn it. You know, after this game, it was going to be the point, like, see how great Abercrombie's prose is that you could tell just from the line who's speaking? You failed my experiment.
I failed.
Yep. I got one more for you.
Okay.
If you get this one, you get all the credit back, okay?
Okay.
I will give you 4 out of 4, okay?
Okay.
The pathetic figure sitting across from Blank, face the shape and size of a hog's ass, stench equally vile, was the only man in the world he hated more than himself. How's that line sound?
Great, but a whole...
The pathetic figure sitting across from Blank, face the shape and size of a hog's ass, stench equally vile, was the only man in the world he hated more than himself. You think that's a great line?
Yeah. Yeah. Is this even from the book?
Let me say it once more.
I know the reference. I know.
No, I'll say it once more. I'll say it with the character's name in there. Okay?
I get it.
The pathetic figure sitting across from Austin, face the shape and size of a hog's ass.
I get it. I got it the first time.
Not the first time. After a couple, come on. It took a time. Or two.
Okay. I got it the second
time. I saw gears turning. It was... And that's the game! I'll try to do more games in the future. That was fun for me.
Failed, but I'll still stand behind it.
I like the mini compliment you gave before you figured it out. I'm taking that. I'll pocket it.
It was good.
Thank you.
It was good. It was a good line. To be fair, if I were to guess,
yeah,
very much a Galacta line. In the same vein.
In the same vein, yeah. I was trying to get a little bit Abercrombie-esque. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
The self-hatred is there.
Yeah, see? besides that, I have... I actually already read it earlier, the page 45 I was going to refer to. But fantastic prose. It might go higher in the future for me. It's this debut novel. I'm like, man, does it get better than this as well? I'm invested. I love The Blade itself. You love it even more.
Yeah.
4.25 out of 5 for me. A 5 for you.
Yeah. Wow. I love it.
You don't see these too often.
No. When I rate something higher, oh, God.
Wow.
I'm either really right or I'm just not a voice for the people.
Yes.
That's one of the two. I'm either pretentious or correct. Both can be correct. No. You're right. I can be pretentious and correct.
If you can, too, go comment below pretentious and correct.
Good.
Yeah. All right. Hope you all enjoyed this episode. We will see you next time, next week, or either Monday, Friday, whenever this is being uploaded. We'll see you then.
At some time.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.